Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 17th of May, 2021. Still not good with the dates. Anyway, joined by Josh.
Hello.
Carl's on holiday for one more day, and then he's back, and then he'll be off on the next Monday, and he's off for another week, and then he'll be back for good, in case people are wondering, because I know it's a bit of a workaround. But without further ado, we wanted to do a little bit of shilling here. So Carl's done a segment with Bo. This is another history podcast in which they're talking about, so previously talked about Hanno the Navigator, who went down to East Africa and explored, like, the met some like gorillas and took the skins home to show off to the people, and then he sailed around there. This is like the opposite. So he went to the barbarians of the north and went up to Ireland and England and maybe Iceland. But it's really good. You should go and give it a watch. I was just sat there listening to it when they did it. It's an interesting podcast because it's just the fact that it's so early in history, and yet you have these guys coming to England and being like, ooh, weird like foreigners, in the same way of going to the New World or something.
Yeah, I had no idea that this had even happened, so it's really interesting to hear about, and I'm looking forward to listening to this one because the Hanno one was great.
Anyway, let's get right... No. Okay, so we're going to be talking today about the UK immigration being down 73%, the Palestinian march in London of peace, mostly peaceful, and the... what was the last topic? I can't remember now. What was it? I can't remember.
It's your topic.
Yeah, I've forgotten. Oh, well.
Should the Labour Party be saved?
Oh, should the Labour Party be saved? Yeah, sorry. I forgot about the Labour Party, just like everyone else, but we'll get back to them. Sure. So, first thing here, so the immigration. So... Immigration is down 73% for the year of 2020. Now, the reason I say immigration is because this is a bit weird. The Home Office, as you can see here in the first link, is them listing how many people come to the UK. And immigration is, of course, including everyone. So not just people who come here to settle, those who come for short periods of time, whether it be for work, whether it be for university, or whether it be for just, you know, holiday. So it's passengers. They count, so people arriving in the UK. And that's what's down 73%. So... don't have the statistics on net migration of people staying, but that's as it is written. But it is called immigration. That's why I've said it's immigration. So if we can scroll through this is just glorious to look at, I'm going to say. So if we get to the first graph, so you can just scroll until you find the first graph here. Oof. I mean, look at it. Like, number of passengers arriving per year listed here from 2011 to 2020. It's like 100 million and something in 2011. 2019 was 140 million. 2020, 40 million, maybe. Tops.
So this is largely tourists, I would imagine.
So it's everyone. So everyone. People who want to come here for a whole host of reasons are not able to come here because of, obviously, COVID. I don't want the Conservatives touting this as like we fixed the immigration system. No. This Conservative win goes to the virus, apparently. The most Conservative force in all of the land. So if we go to the next graph here, you can see this is the visas that were handed out. Off a cliff with that one, so people not coming here. And also the third graph here, if we can show, is just per month. So from the amount of people you have coming here, you can see the vast majority is January, February 2020, because there were no restrictions in place. The virus was not massive in Europe. And then March, April, so forth, we got the lockdowns and all the rest of it, in which case no one comes. I mean, next to no one there. I don't know how so many people are still coming in the middle of what is meant to be shut down of the entire country, but whatever. It's statistically insignificant compared to previous years. And that's just something to look at. And did the country collapse? No. Country's fine. Like, immigration, on my stance on this, immigration, good. You can get good immigrants, you can get people who love the country, you can get the skills that you want, all the rest of it. But immigration is good because there's more of it, is not something that stands up to anything. I mean, more immigration is more good. Why? Like, once you've got what you need, why do you need more?
Well, surely the loss of tourism is really bad. Like that's something that's huge, that's probably damaged the economy, and especially there are lots of areas in the UK that aren't really very industrial, and they rely on tourism more than anything, that have probably...
Absolutely. I mean, this is the point I'm making, which is that, you know, immigration, people come here to spend money and then go home, goods. People who come here to do a job that we can't recruit for because of specialist skills or something like this, good. But just importing loads and loads and loads of people, like, this is the argument for mass migration. The reason it's been stuck in net 300,000 people per year coming here to settle. Okay, well, immigration disappeared for a year. What happened? The country did not die. We did not fall to our knees and suffer some kind of stroke of aging population or some sort. It's fine. You can take away immigration and the country still functions. So this argument that, no, we need net 300,000 a year, bunk. Absolute bunk. And of course, this is not talking about the as I mentioned, the ones that you do want to come here to spend money, to so on and so forth. But the idea that you just can take endless amounts of migrants and this is the way things must be is not true.
to kind of play devil's advocate here, wouldn't it be perhaps that more people were stuck inside, people consuming less, there's less need for people in the economy?
I don't really think so. There's still plenty of need for people to come and do X, Y, and Z. And the government will tell you this endlessly. But yeah, the reality is that people, as you can see, could still come here. You still have millions of people coming, but not hundreds of millions. And therefore, what's the thing here? It's like, okay, essential work, yep, for non-essential workers or people who are not particularly useful to the UK economy or society, why? What's the argument? And there doesn't seem to be one, in my view.
Yeah, I agree with your point.
Immigration good, mass migration not good, and you should own it. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because I wanted to go into, so remember we left off on this story, I think it was last week, in which Glasgow protesters rejoice as men freed after immigration van standoff. So this was in Glasgow. There were two men who were illegals. Apparently they've been here for like 10 years or something. The immigration enforcement, after that prolonged period of time, decided to act and do their job. So they got these guys, they put them in a van, and then all of a sudden, spontaneously, out of the blue, a whole bunch of leftists come out and surround the van and refuse to move. And the police, being the law enforcement, beat them back. And no, of course they didn't. No, they cucked immediately.
Did you say they'd been here for 10 years?
I think that was the correct statistic. They said they'd been here.
That's such an indictment of our...
Our system sucks.
Yeah, like what are they doing? 10 years. That's a long time.
Crazy. What was weird is they gave an interview with ITV after, and the guy who was in the van couldn't even speak English. I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, you're making the worst case ever. He could speak like three words. He was like, oh, thank you very much. And then just had to do the rest in what is it, Punjabi or whatever. It's just like, I'm going to...
So anyway. He's been here 10 years and he didn't even speak English after all that time.
But, you know. Okay.
Okay.
So they say in here, campaigners have hailed a victory for Glaswegian solidarity and told the Home Office, you messed with the wrong city, as two men detained by UK immigration enforcement were released back to their community after a day of protest, the standing outside and doing nothing. I mean, again, there was no threat to the police. The police in Scotland just cucked immediately. This is the Scottish police. The immigration enforcement were carrying out their job. Scottish police turned up, and then all of a sudden, they decided they'd let them go. And I'm like, no, there was political involvement here.
So how did so many people turn up if it was just like a routine thing? How did they even know about it and mobilise that many people?
Magic. Magic, I'm sure. Yeah. So they say in here, Police Scotland intervened to free the men after a tense day-long standoff between immigration officials and hundreds of local residents who surrounded the van in a residential area outside Glasgow to stop the detention of the men during Eid al-Fitr. What? Eid al-Fitr. Eid. A Muslim holiday. The men, not Muslim, in case you were wondering. We covered this yesterday, but it was... Sorry, last week. But it was just Nicola Sturgeon, everyone coming out of the woodwork. But how dare they do this on the holy Muslim holiday? I was like, not Muslim. So also, what's that got to do with anything?
I didn't even realise that. Like, so when I was reading all the stories about it, I assumed they were Muslim because it kept on being mentioned, but they were Indian.
They were Sikhs.
They were Sikhs. They probably don't even like Islam, really.
Probably got pretty strong views on Islam. But I so pathetic. Like, even after all the information's come out, like, you can see the media here, the Guardian article, still listing, oh, they did this on Eid. It's like, yeah, I forgot, Christmas. All the laws are suspended for Christmas, right? You can go out and kill people. It's like the purge.
You don't do that at Christmas?
No. Never mind. I forgot. Yeah, during holidays, there's just no laws. It's like, it doesn't even matter. It's so pointless. Anyway, so the reason I wanted to bring this up as well is because I found an article in which there's this guy who's arguing for mass migration, like this is his viewpoint. He wants open migration, as he puts it. And what's interesting is he brings up a perspective on this particular topic that I hadn't thought about. So that releasing of the men after a pathetic protest. Like there were no, I still can't get over how there was no threat to the police officers. They were like, no, just give up. Law and order. Suspend it. Anyway, so he says in here, Patel has the Liberals licked on immigration. Until her opponents address voters' concerns, the Home Secretary will keep winning the debate. There's a simple logic about immigration. Unless you believe your country should have no borders and be entirely open to anyone in the world, you must accept that the state needs to be able to remove uninvited people. True, we can agree with this guy on this. I accept this as someone who's long argued for a liberal open migration policy. Liberal open migration policy, okay, sure. Yeah. I have a, like, you know the whole liberal thing of like, oh, free movement of goods, people. And I'm just like, people? They're not goods. You can't be destroyed and created. En masse.
Yeah, and that there is a certain amount of limitation. If everyone just moved to France in the world, it wouldn't be able to support it, right?
Yeah.
So there's got to be some level of limitation there.
But if it has the same societal impact as like packets of cheese, like if we import mass amounts of fridged packets of cheese, it has the same impact as mass French people. It's like, no, people are complex and have more interactions. Like they affect the society they come to. They're not just something that can be thrown around and no results come of it. Anyway, so he says, my side of the immigration debate has been losing for years. Yeah, I wonder why. Largely because we failed a basic political test, understanding and addressing the views of people who disagree with us. Okay, so he's admitting that most of the country disagrees with him on this. Based Britain. We lost the fight for the EU we lost the fight for EU freedom of movement because we failed to grasp that while the policy was good for Britain overall, voters don't see their lives or their communities in the same way. Just think about that statement. Like, it's good for Britain overall, but the people of Britain don't see it as good for their lives or their communities.
So he's saying it's good for the elites, if you're reading between the lines. Like, maybe it's good for companies that you can force down wages because there are more people, but for the actual people that are the majority, it affects them negatively, and they can see that.
I mean,
so that's what he's admitting, really, isn't it?
Like, it's good for Britain, but no one who lives here is British. Who's it good for? Like, what are you talking about? It's just such a weird thing to say. I can imagine him writing that down, and just he doesn't realize it, does he? Anyway, so... Now we're outside the EU, ministers have shifted their focus of immigration policy away from economic migrants, most of whom came from Europe, to asylum and deportation. And again here, the liberal open side is losing because it refuses to accept the need for a proper system of enforcement and removal. True. Totally true. I mean, this is the reason I'm focusing on this, because this guy may have some stupid views on how immigration should work in this country. I mean, open migration, you're nuts. But he is able to identify the problem with his side of the debate, which is that you have him saying we should have controlled borders, but we should have open migration. And then you have the other guys on his side that say, why would we bother with controls if we want open migration? And they're right. Like, if you do want open, uncontrolled migration, that why would you bother with a border? But this is the Tony Blair approach of saying, yeah, we'll have the border, we'll pretend we have control, but we will do nothing in that.
It's like a symbolic border, really, in that they're saying, oh, we've got this border, but really it doesn't really matter, does it, to them? And it's almost like to trick people into thinking, well, we have controls in place, but they don't really.
It's weird. Anyway, so he says, migrant rights campaigners like to point to the polls in which Britons profess sympathy for refugees and pride in a country that welcomes people fleeing persecution. Sure, because genuine refugees fleeing genuine persecution deserve sympathy. They overlook the results from the same polls showing at least half the country believes that most people who arrive here claiming to be fleeing such persecution are lying. The British people believe that most of them are lying. I wonder why.
Yeah, I can't possibly think of why. Guess? I mean, it's not as if most of the people on, you know, the northern border of France that are trying to get into the UK are from places that aren't at war. They're mainly North African economic migrants.
I thought you were going to say they're from North African countries. I was going to be like, I didn't know France had joined the North African sphere, but, but that's the thing as well. Like, you're fleeing persecution from Macron. Don't believe you. BS. You are a BS. I can't say it. Anyway. So the next thing I wanted to show here was, as Douglas Murray has pointed out in a previous article, in which he just quotes the EU talking about this, of those who came to Europe in general, so not even to the UK, in which you have to come through France, in which case you are not fleeing persecution, you liar. So the ones here, so of course I'm not talking about all refugees as well, I should make that clear. Like, if you're flying here from a country because you're fleeing a, you know, authoritarian regime that's be broad about it, then okay, you have a reason to be here. But if you're just breaking through France because, I don't know, Algeria isn't nice this time of year, too bad. You don't get free gifts. That's how that works. So this is Douglas Murray pointing out here that the ones who did come in 2016, remember the mass migrant columns, the mass migration, then Mama Merkel decided to say everyone can come. According to the EU, 60% of those came had no more right to be called European citizens than anyone else in the world. No right to be there. 60%.
That really doesn't surprise me.
60%. He's like, how can the British people think that most of the people coming here don't deserve to be here? Because they don't. So the data, 60%. Like, we can just look at the people crossing the channel when they get here, when they put them in the barracks and whatnot, the way they act, the way they have absolutely no care for this country, they have no reason to be here, and they start saying things like, I'd rather be in Syria. It's like, well, you're not fleeing persecution then, are you?
Well, if they're coming from Syria, maybe. But it depends who they are, right?
But that's the thing. They're just liars. Like, I don't believe you. If you're like, no, I'd rather go back to the war-torn country than live in this four-star hotel, shut up. Like, you're not fleeing persecution for a second. Anyone fleeing persecution for a second would, quite frankly, enjoy being in a four-star hotel rather than back in the war. So there's that. But it's also not just about the liars. you know, the people lying for asylum cases or the illegals breaking through and then just deciding they want to stay here. But it's about the tone and tenor of the legal migration. This is the thing that gets thrown by the wayside, I see, somewhat by the let's say, right-wing press. The left-wing press, of course, love it, but they love all migration. So this is something that popped up. I remember we covered this before, Batley Grammar School. Now, you might remember this. This was the school in which a British teacher was teaching blasphemy, and so he used a picture of Muhammad with a bomb as a turban, because this was an example of blasphemy in Islam, and saying, that's blasphemy. For this, there was protest outside of school, death threats against him, he had to be suspended from his job. The school then persecuted him by launching an investigation into him, as if he'd done anything wrong.
Like, yeah, didn't the headmaster as well, didn't he say that he had made a mistake and wanted him to apologise? And I think he lost his job in the end, didn't he?
Like, it made no damn sense. Like, the course had already been taught for a couple of years, I believe, and the student had no problems, but suddenly now there's a problem. It was because Samuel Paty had been executed in France for exactly the same thing, showing that this is what blasphemy is in Islam. That's it. That's all they did. Anyway, so in this article, there's been a new development on this. Of course, the school has still been pathetic. The government has been quite pathetic on this, not coming out in full support of the teacher and defending free speech. But in here, so there's one trainee who's a student at Manchester University, and she writes, one trainee student at Manchester Metropolitan University contacted his course leader to ask whether they would support someone who did show such an image in class. The response was not the one he expected. The university's reaction was telling. It did not initially respond to the trainee's email request for advice. Instead, it contacted him a month later, saying he must attend a disconcertingly named Fitness to Practice Cause for Concern meeting.
What? That's ridiculous. Just for asking a question.
Asking a question.
That is absurd.
He had a thought. That was his crime in this instance. He's a trainee. He's training to be a teacher, presumably. And he's like, hey, would you guys support if a teacher did do this? And they just ignore him for a month and then demand, no, you must go on a disciplinary meeting. For thinking. For asking a question.
Well, I know, definitely don't go to Manchester University.
What an asshole. Yeah. So she says in here, the idea that a trainee can be disciplined for an action they have not yet committed is not just absurd, it goes against the very fundamentals of education and training, where open debate should be encouraged, not shut down. I mean, again,
absolutely, yeah.
Asked a goddamn question. I mean, that's how cucked Britain is on this issue, in which someone's like, hey, can I blaspheme, and would you support me if I did it? Like, not even done any blasphemy. Don't worry. No, he's not... You know, the Conservative government doesn't have to worry. He hasn't blasphemed against Islam yet. He's just thinking about it. And for thinking, that is what gets him this meeting, this disciplinary action, in which he has to go to a meeting about his fitness to practice and cause for concern. Cause for concern. Concern of what?
So has anything actually come of this then? Or is it just in process at the minute?
This is still in process at the minute, but it's just, I can't believe that a university would do this to a trainee teacher for asking a question. I mean, that's how pathetic it is. I mean, never mind the school. The school, the government still hasn't come out and supported the teacher, but...
Yeah, if they're a trainee as well, it's their job to answer their questions. It's if they're to teach them how to be a good teacher, then asking questions is what this person should be doing. And the difficult questions are the best ones to ask a lot of the time. So it's ridiculous that they've done this.
I mean, the trainee student here needs to know as well, because he may exactly be in the position. I mean, this has happened in the real world that we already had. And there's also just the question here. Okay, fine. Remember we were talking about immigration? This isn't because of false refugee claims. This isn't because of illegals coming over. This is because of the legal migration, and everyone knows it. The legal migration that we've had into this country has caused this issue. This problem did not arise through the shires. Like, there are no, you know, I don't know, like Catholic and Protestant small communities that have forced Islamic blasphemy laws upon us. No, this is an imported issue into Britain. Islamic blasphemy laws. I don't know why that could be difficult to obtain. In which case, you have to think about the legal immigration as well. And government's just not really doing it. Like, I see the point system, and that's nice and all, and, you know, a much better step. And we'll see if it holds up in 2021, because as I say, it's only down for 2020 so far. But the thing that needs to be expanded on there is... The pure numbers, good, that needs to be taken now, but also the tenor of the migrations, the kind of people you let in, and the things they believe, because you cannot import people en masse who honestly believe in Islamic blasphemy laws for the UK. Not sustainable.
Didn't Tony Blair, the architect of our current immigration policies, actually say that Islamic values are incompatible with Western values? So the guy who actually created this...
Greece.
Yeah.
Like, a direct quote, millions of Muslims hold views that are fundamentally incompatible with the West. Tony Blair.
So if even he is coming out against it, surely people need to realise that this is not good.
Needs to be taken in consideration for the immigration process.
And it's obvious that people are almost being held ransom here out of fear. Like, you say anything against Islam and the university will call you in for an intervention, you'll lose your job. And it's almost uncriticisable because everyone's afraid because they saw what happened in France.
The Islamic scholars of Metropolitan University in Manchester. Yeah. But yeah, what a mess. I mean, at least immigration's been down for this year. But as the Conservative government's brought through their points policy, it needs to go down. It needs to continue to stay down because it cannot continue as it is. But good news, at least, being down for 1 year.
I suppose anyway,
Tell me about London.
Yeah, so as everyone's probably aware, because it's been in the news quite a lot recently, there has been a kind of huge increase in violence between Israel and Palestine. And supposedly, at least 139 people have been killed in Gaza and 9 people have been killed in Israel. And you might wonder why is there such a disparity? And I think to look at that, we need to have a look at this video of the Israeli Iron Dome, which is just a thing from science fiction, as far as I'm aware.
It's a marvel of technology.
Like, it's amazing.
So for people listening, you can see the Hamas rockets coming in and then the Israeli interceptors hitting them.
Yeah, so they're sending out rockets to essentially explode the rockets in the air. I think that's how it works. I don't really know. I've just been too busy marveling.
I read about this hugely back when it was being developed and then came out. I think it was like, you know, early 2016 or something when it was first being tested and used. And I might be wrong. But I remember reading about it in the Hamas rockets. Like, there's a bit of a problem here. The Hamas rockets, they cost about $200, $300 to get set off. But the interceptor rockets at the time cost $50,000.
Oh, wow. That's
so if Hamas
huge
launches
disparity.
200 rockets, cost them, you know, a few thousand. But you have to send out the interceptors, it's going to cost you a ton to get rid of all 200.
So yeah, them sending over the rockets is not really as futile as it might seem because it's costing Israel a lot of money.
Yeah, even if they all get stopped, it costs a heck of a lot to keep them out.
Yeah, but that's in part why there's such a disproportionate number. And also there's the fact that Gaza, that kind of area, is very densely populated, and quite often some of the combatants in Palestine use civilian buildings, and therefore it's not always clear whether, you know, something is a military or not. But I'm not here to talk about that because
the debate about Israel Palestine.
I don't really know enough about it either.
We're here to talk about London, so
yeah. So there was a protest, I believe, on Saturday. Where thousands marched to the Israeli embassy in London chanting Free Palestine. And if you could scroll down, you can see a picture with lots of flags there saying Free Palestine, Gaza, Stop Israel's such and such.
Socialist Workers Party stuff there.
Yeah. So it's kind of Muslims and left-wingers. Not that they're mutually exclusive a lot of the time.
But they're the majority group who support Palestine in the international scene.
Yeah. And it seemed like there was a lot of overlap between, as we'll see.
Leftists.
Yeah. Macron was right. So, The Guardian reported on the protest as being mostly peaceful. They say here, 13 people have been arrested after a day of largely peaceful protests in solidarity with the people of Palestine outside the Israel embassy on Saturday. So we're seeing some American journalism here in the UK in that they're saying, oh, it was mostly peaceful. But then, as we'll see, that actually 9 police officers were injured and there were clashes with the police. They were throwing projectiles at people and they were certainly being violent. And these police were stood outside the Israeli embassy trying to protect it from all the people outside, because who knows what would have happened had they not been there. And they were targeted and it certainly wasn't peaceful. Like, we'll see a video in a second. One of the things that has become most prominent here is this next video where there was a Palestinian convoy, or at least people flying Palestinian flags. And let's just have a look at this. Thank you.
I mean, I hate to be a leftist, but yikes. F the Jews, rape their daughters, rape their mothers.
Yeah, it's pretty strong rhetoric, isn't it? And they were going through like some kind of Islamic State convoy as well, flying flags.
They should have been blasting some, you know, like Islamist music while they were doing it.
Yeah, and this video has got a lot of criticism from pretty much everyone who is a normal person, obviously.
I disavow raping Jewish women and daughters for no reason.
Yeah.
I think it'd be hard, but okay.
So this is obviously really bad, and this is just going on in London right now, just people driving around for a megaphone shouting these sorts of things, flying the Palestinian flag in long convoys. Here's another one where they're not shouting anything, but here we go. Of course, more flags. Hugo said earlier that it's a bit like Chechnya, where you've just got the people like out of the windows with the flags just driving past like lunatics. But in particular, I just thought it was funny that there were just loads of normal cars, just like, what the hell is going on here? It's like, we just want to get home.
Just to be clear as well, was there an Israeli protest at all in London or just this Palestinian one?
Not that I'm aware of, but I imagine it wouldn't have been a good idea to have one at the same time, because obviously all these people assembled. If there was an Israeli protest, it probably would have got violent. And we've seen that in other protests in other countries where there have been Israeli ones and then Palestinians have turned up and attacked them. And for the sake of kind of fairness, I imagine that the opposite has also gone on as well, but I just haven't seen it.
So, I mean, also the demographics here, I mean, like the UK, for example, I mean, just on pure numbers, the amount of people you would expect to support Palestine versus Israel en masse, you know, committed enough to go out and do protests, you're not going to get a mass Palestinian protest. Sorry, mass Israeli protest, but you can get a mass Palestinian one.
Yeah, we've got a much larger Muslim population than Jewish. Yeah. So.
I mean, this was the question asked the Labour Party. It was like, why are you accepting of anti-Semitism all the time? And it's like, yeah, well, who's got more votes?
Yeah, that's our voter base. We can't criticise them.
Oh, God, Labour.
So we've got another video here, and it's of a guy stood on a lamppost with an Israeli flag. And he's about to tear it up, I think. Yep. To a cheering crowd, you know. And that's London, just to remind everyone.
Is there a BTFO? How will they recover from this?
I know, it is a bit of a pointless gesture, isn't it? I always think that you're like, you've ripped up someone's flag or burnt their flag, but you've also gone out and bought it, so.
More money to Israel.
That'd be funny.
Oh, boy.
So, we've got the final clip here of the actual violence with the police here. And as you can see, they're holding off a very large crowd, and there's lots of police officers there. It's quite violent. But to give them credit, there are some people that are preventing them from attacking the police. So I don't want to demonise all of them, because it's only a few people, well, a significant number of people attacking the police, but it's not fair to say it's every single one of them. And there were ones that were saying, no, don't attack them.
Hashtag not all.
Yeah. And this was the same sort of thing in Bristol as well, with the Bristol riots. I know this is a completely different thing, but all the media showed was people attacking the police, but there were other people who were there peacefully. And I think it always gets tarred with the same brush. And although I'm certainly no friend of any of these protesters, it's something that we need to be reasonable about, because if we just demonize everyone and then there is video evidence against it, it makes people who criticize the movement as a whole look worse.
This is why when we did that segment, we went, here's the peaceful protest in the morning, and then it turned to S, because it did turn to S.
Yeah, and it was pretty bad in the evening in Bristol, but that's another thing entirely. So there was also the former Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn. He was down there just to remind everyone that he was kicked out. Like, well, he was received to a cheering crowd, which is slightly worrying. But for anyone who doesn't know or needs reminding, he was kicked out of the Labour Party for anti-Semitism, which is a little bit strange that he'd be at this protest, isn't it? I mean, it almost seems like there's some truth to these allegations. And
so I can see if you can click on the images, just so we can see, there's Jeremy Corbyn, just
there he is.
In a chat with a rose, peaceful guy, and then the next one here. Yeah, what's this?
Yeah, so only, I don't know, a few feet away from Jeremy Corbyn is this effigy, I suppose, of the...
It's a huge inflatable.
Yeah, a huge...
With devil horns.
Yeah, and it's... The Prince of the United Arab Emirates, Mohammed bin Zayed, and they're portraying him as the devil because he had done deals with Israel and normalized the UAE's relations with them. And for that, he's being portrayed with rather unflattering features.
With the biggest nose you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Red eyes, and then devil horns. And then claws as well. I just saw them. A little red bits at the end.
So it's clearly an anti-Semitic depiction, right?
Because he's done a deal with Israel, he's basically big nose devil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is what Jeremy Corbyn was.
Just the socialist worker placard all around it as well. You know, like, you ever seen the Klan where they got like a cross they're burning and they're all stood around with their robes and whatnot?
Yeah.
It's just like the equivalency.
Socialists in their natural habitat.
Yeah. I'm going to show you an image from the Soviet Union. I think it's like a theme park or something, and there's like this big web and then a spider on it that's huge, you know, lifelike, and there's just a Jewish star on its forehead.
Oh.
It's just like the anti-Semitic effigies. There's a lot of them. But, I'll show you that after. It's just so weird. Like, I don't know why socialists have such obsession.
I don't really get it. Like, what?
Well, they're rich. I suppose that's the obsession. Like, Jews disproportionately have a number of wealth compared to the population, and therefore they're the ones who control the blanks, blah, 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 blah. This is socialist perspective, not my perspective. I'm saying why that we say.
That's an important caveat to have at the end. But so, many of the members in the Labour Party actually condemned all of this, and they basically said, okay, fair enough if you...
After their ex-leader went down and gave a speech next week.
Yeah. But funnily enough, Jeremy Corbyn didn't say anything. So he says... Thank you to the people of Oxford for their support and solidarity with the Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. So, yeah.
Oh, my God. Because I saw, like, a whole bunch of this squad. You know, they've taken the American name and reused it over here because they've got no ideas in the Labour Party. And all of them were denouncing yesterday's events. And I saw even Keir Starmer had denounced it and whatnot. Jeremy Corbyn's just like, nah. Screw your optics. I'm going in.
Well.
He's
Diane Abbott.
His own. Maybe it's his. Maybe he brought it from home.
Yeah, that's actually how they got it. He just keeps it in his house. No, Diane Abbott was also at the protest as well.
You know those Frosty the Snowman inflatables? See, it's that, but he changes the face.
Yeah, he puts it outside for Christmas.
God.
No, Diane Abbott also went down, and also this was the only thing she said about the protests and the... I think it was at the same event. I'm not sure whether it was the same place where Corbyn spoke, but she also went down and did a talk, and she also said nothing about it afterwards, which is unusual considering pretty much everyone else in the Labour Party has disavowed this.
Yeah, like even the nut job types, like the full-on Corbynistas I've seen have denounced this whole thing, and been like, yesterday was actually a bit of a mistake.
So yeah, Zara Sultana also went down and gave a talk, but she actually came out and disavowed it after the fact.
She's nuts.
Like, yeah.
She's full on crazy.
She's one of the furthest left in our parliament. So she says, solidarity with Jewish communities in London today after the despicable incident of anti-Semitic abuse on Finchley Road. The Palestinian struggle for freedom is anti-racist at its heart, demanding equality and dignity for all. These racists have no place in the solidarity movement. And you can also see Andy Ngo replying to her saying, Palestinian nationalism is not anti-racist. Have you read the Hamas charter?
I haven't.
No, me neither. But might be something worth looking at.
All right, midnight reading. Charter.
So yeah, if even the more radical elements of the Labour Party are disavowing this, there's clearly something wrong with what happened here. because, you know, they've got every reason to kind of win over these votes, and they're really not taking it. They know it looked really bad. So to move on to some of the other reactions, Boris Johnson, of course, condemns it. He says there is no place for anti-Semitism in our society. Ahead of Chauviot, I don't know how to pronounce that, I'm sorry, I stand with Britain's Jews, who should not have to endure the type of shameful racism we have seen today. Rightly so. And Keir Starmer also condemned it. He says this is, he's sharing a kind of a screenshot of the people going down the street saying the awful things, flying the Palestinian flags in the convoy that we saw and listened to earlier. And he says, utterly disgusting, anti-Semitism, misogyny and hate have no place on our streets or in our society. Well, they
so they said rape Jewish daughters, rape Jewish mothers. Okay, sure, it's gendered, obviously, the fact that you're raping women here, but misogyny, like, I don't feel like rapists rape because they hate women. I feel like he's, you know, if this guy was to go out and rape a Jewish daughter, because she's a Jew.
Yeah, that much is pretty obvious, but I think he's trying to score some points within the same apology there.
I mean, throw in more words, why not? No.
And then he says there must be consequences.
I've just looked up the charter here. I just typed in Jew to see what came up. The end times will not come until the Muslims fight the Jews and kill them. Until the Jews hide behind the rocks and the trees, which will cry out, Muslim, there is a Jew hiding behind me, come and kill him. This will not apply to Gerard, which is the Jewish tree. It's like, yeah, it's pretty anti-Semitic. What's interesting about that, that's actually a quote from the Quran as well.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's slightly scary. So there's also a tweet here from Apsana Begum, who is a Muslim MP, saying, the despicable incident of anti-Semitism in North London must be denounced and condemned by all. The toxic combination of gendered racism and misogyny targeting hate towards women and girls was horrifying.
Expelled from the Labour Party for not supporting Corbyn.
She says, it stands in complete opposition to the Palestinian struggle, which demands universal dignity, solidarity with the Jewish community. I stand with you against this bigotry. Well, considering that quote you just read out, that
I'm sus. There we go. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't really want to dwell on this, funnily enough. So even Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, has said, reports of hateful and intimidating and racist language used on marches and social media this weekend are deeply concerning. Behaviour that incites anti-Jewish or anti-Muslim hatred has no place in our city. The Met have my full backing for their zero tolerance approach to tackling it. Notice that he said anti-Muslim. I didn't really see any anti-Muslim hatred going
just,
on there.
Just has to throw it in, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's trying to portray himself as being in the middle of it, isn't he?
You know what's irritating as well after reading these? I'm going to have to defend them. Like, the guy's shouting there. It was like, well, okay, what they're shouting is bad. I don't like what they were shouting, so on and so forth. Big shock, I know. But did they actually cause any violence? Were they inciting violence? In the standard for inciting violence that I think is good, which is the US-American one, which is that there has to be imminent. So these guys shouting from a car, you know, do this illegal act, raping Jewish women. Sure, he's saying that. That's bad. Mm-hmm. It does maybe incite hatred. I can see that argument. But should it be a crime? Because if he's not actually causing any damage, if he's just saying a thing that is hurtful, well, that's not enough in my view.
It is pretty close to the line, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I really don't want to support these people, but at the same time, it's like I really hate this idea that anyone who says anything disgusting should be sent to jail, because then, you know, Section 127, all the rest of it. It's like, no, as long as they don't actually cause any physical harm, if they just hurt people's feelings, I mean, yeah, I can see how this can very much hurt your feelings, but if it doesn't do anything, then it shouldn't be a crime, in my view.
Sure.
Sorry.
That's a fair point, to be fair. So there are also some unusual reactions in general, and we've actually got tweet by you, which I saw this morning, and I didn't tell you I was going to include, but it's got the contrasting reporting. So there's the Associated Press saying, Israeli strike destroys Gaza building with AP, other media, and I think this is the media block that got collapsed in Gaza. And then we've got CBS News that says, it's reporting on something that someone else has said, by the way, violence is when an agent of the state kneels on a man's neck until the life is leached out of his body. Destroying property, which can be replaced, is not violence. To use the same language to describe those two things is not moral. And that is N. Hannah Jones on CSNBC. Or is that Nicola Hannah Jones? I think that's right. I might be mispronouncing her name. But
one of these leftists that looks like she's from a Batman cartoon.
Like a Batman villain.
Not a fan of the red hair. Mm. Anyway, but yeah, essentially, like, destroying property is fine. It can be replaced. No problem. It's like, absolute liars. Like, you do not care.
So what I'd like to point out here is the obvious hypocrisy that the same people who are saying, okay, the destruction of property in the Black Lives Matter protests is fine, but then they'll be like, Israel, evil. They're destroying people's homes, destroying buildings in Gaza, and obviously all destruction of property is not good. Although...
Yeah, all bad, property rights, good, but they are in a war. There's probably their defense there.
Yeah.
Mention.
Yeah.
War is hell. I mean, it's one of the weird things. I've seen people posting clips of, like, them hiding with their kids on both sides and being like, how horrible that I have to hide with the kids. And I'm like, dude, it's war. Like, what are you expecting? Like, yeah. Anyway.
So the final thing I wanted to mention was that there was a socialist campaign group which wrote a letter which is headed...
So this is a group headed by a bunch of Labour MPs as well.
It is, yeah.
The members.
So it says... Justice for Palestine, and I'm not going to read the letter, but it has lots of names that have been kind of attributed to it in solidarity. You can see here. I think
so can
people
you click
like,
on the second image here, just so I can see. So I see Diane Abbott, Tahir Ali, Spana Begum.
Of course, Jeremy Corbyn.
Richard Bergen, Dawn Butler.
Yeah, we've also got members of the House of Lords as well. Sharmi Chakrabarty, wasn't she Amnesty International?
Yeah, she's also a censorious.
Yeah, so she's Ontario. A member of the House of Lords, unfortunately, and she's signed it as well. But there's lots of names here, so if you want to know the kind of people who are supportive of this sort of thing, not to say that all of them are, but the events over the weekend, these are the kind of people who might have been attending in the Labour Party. But I think you'd like to talk to us about whether the Labour Party can be saved, speaking of which.
Yeah, stunk on the Labour Party. It's always fun, so... So, yeah, I mean, there's a bit of a mess for the Labour Party there, being like, hey, let's try and support these protests, but at the same time, there's loads of anti-Semitism. But that's not the only thing they've had wrong. So, first thing I want to talk about was the Labour Party's collapse from the inside. So the Blairites, I'm going to call them, the group of people who were sort of like done with politics, but looking back at their party and being like, what have you done to it? Like, even these people were nuts in their day, but they're even looking back and being like, Jesus Christ, like, you guys have broken it beyond repair. So the first one I wanted to talk about was Trevor Phillips. For people who might know Trevor Phillips, so Trevor Phillips is a cool guy. So if you get up the first article, it's just him saying, Labour cannot read the writing on the wall. And this is his assessment of why Labour is absolutely doomed. And Trevor Phillips, you might remember him if you don't, from his speech about sleepwalking into segregation. So he gave a warning about Britain's ethnic problems, in which you had people self-segregating into different groups, and therefore we are becoming a segregated society. That's the thing that gave him the most notoriety when he was in charge of the Equality
Department. It's being explicitly done, isn't there? Like a black-only university in London now that's been set up.
Well, not necessarily just that. Like, if you can see here, this is the documentary he's done, which I recommend everyone to go and watch, called Things We Won't Say About Race That Are True. It's on YouTube. It's free. I don't know if it's meant to be. But you can see here, like, he goes to Leicester and he just demonstrates the facts. Like, it's not his opinion or something that will happen. It is already happened. And this was in, you know, I think it was like 2015 or 2011, actually, I think it was made. You can see in the west side of Leicester, almost all white British, and then on the east side, you get the Asians, and you can see how they are segregated into their own groups by free choice. That is their decision. They decide where they want to live, and people have decided they wish to live among their own ethnic group. Sorry, own racial group in this case, as well. So that's the thing he warned about, and it was true. It's just factually true. This is a natural ism.
I mean, anyone who goes to any major city kind of knows that there are these things happening. Like in every city I've ever been to, there are areas where certain people of certain ethnicities live in greater concentration, and it's not really a surprise that this is being pointed out, because it's obvious to anyone who lives in a major city in the UK.
Even that, just anyone who's ever gone to university. Like, you've seen it yourself. You go to a university and people will self-segregate into the little groups because it's easier to talk. You see the Chinese students or the Chinese, so forth. Because it's just easier. They've got the same cultural values. They've got the same cultural things they want to do. They've got the same languages. I mean, yeah, people segregate like that.
They're more likely to have something in common.
Not a surprise. I mean, I can't believe how he points this out and he's like, I'm so surprised by this. And I'm like, yeah, come on, mate. Like, I really respect Trevor Phillips, but I just don't understand how him and his colleagues, when they were in the Blair's government, did not see this coming. It's like, this is so obvious. I would have thought anyone who's ever been to university at least would get it, or just lives anywhere would get this point. But fine. So he goes through his article. The first thing he just mentions that he's had to bury a child, and you know that's very bad. So sorry for that. But he says in there that some friends at the funeral witted to him. So now you've had some practice in organizing a burial. Shouldn't you be offering your services to the Labour Party? I mean, a bit of a place to put it up, but technically true. I mean, the Labour Party does deserve its grave. And he says in here, Labour bosses might have tried to spin the recent election results as mixed, pointing to mayoral victories in Manchester, London and the West Country, but they weren't mixed at all. They were unambiguously crushing rejection by the voters who are showing no signs of bias remorse. True. Fact check. True.
Absolutely.
Trevor Phillips, always telling the facts. So one poll published this weekend suggested that were a general election to be held now, the Conservative majority would rise from 80 to 122 seats. That's how bad it is. If we can get to the next link here, this is just the YouGov poll I assume he's referencing. If you can scroll down, you can see that the Conservatives polling at 45%, the Labour Party at 30%. I mean, just BTFO'd. Like, I don't know what's left for them. Like, they should not exist anyway, so more power to the Conservatives here. As long as the Labour Party then collapses, all's well that ends well. So if we go back to the article, he says, despite it all, however, I am not ready to write a eulogy. Shame. You should. Anyone who experienced Labour's grim crawl back to reality after the 1983 catastrophe under Michael Foot knows that if we read the runes of defeat correctly, the party can rise again. Yeah, you really shouldn't, my friend. Like, yeah, I don't know why on earth you think this should be saved in the slightest. Because the weird thing is about Trevor Phillips, he's also like Blair, where they've been doing a bunch of stuff in government and then they spend the rest of their time essentially apologizing and going around being like, everything we did was bad. Everything we did ended with all these results that are terrible and we need to fix this. And it's like, yeah, if there was only someone who could have told you. So he says, also the fact they can rise back, I mean, it's certainly true. We shouldn't just accept that the Labour Party are dead and good buried. Like, they might come back somehow, but they really should.
I believe
buried.
That one is at like 5%. I mean, it's yeah, it's still doing okay.
So he references, Tony Blair last week published a blistering analysis of the centre-left's eclipse and concluded that the Labour Party, quote, needs total deconstruction and reconstruction. Why can't we just end deconstruction? Like, just kill it.
Yeah, how about destruction?
Like, what do you need to bring it back at something? Let's just make something new. You don't need this waste of history. Anyway, so first, Labour lacks a compelling economic message. When the right is prepared to spend whatever it takes, according to Rishi Sunak, Labour's message of Tory austerity seems obtuse. True.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things where, like, plenty of people on the right, centre-right of economics here, especially have been critical of the Conservative Party, rightly. But politically, it's a savvy move. I mean, the fact that they've taken on, we'll just open the taps and spend loads of money.
I'm not exactly happy with how much money the Tories have been spending. But at the same time, they are also going to be stealing lots of Labour voters because they see, well, we've spent an inordinate amount throughout the pandemic. And they can't really say, well, they're the party of austerity anymore because they clearly aren't. Any old idiot can see that.
Yeah, they're burning everyone's money instead.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things as well I've seen, I remember during the Hartlepool election, they've been strategically spending money outside of pandemic spending, obviously. So when they get a new Conservative mayor, they'll be like, hey, you want a whole bunch of stuff? Like, we'll build a, you know, this, that, and the other. We'll put a load of investment here. And then it's a message to everyone around them in the red wall being like, hey, if you vote Conservative, you might get a load of stuff. And it's investments, so it's not a complete waste of money, like, you know, making people dependent on the state by the looks of it. But again, not really happy with all the money being spent, let's be honest. Second, the left has little, if anything, to say about the technological revolution. Two of the most common occupations among Labour voters, retailing and transport, will be transformed by robots and artificial intelligence. Yet the party is content to let Mark Zuckerberg and Nick Clegg define the digital future. True.
I mean, yeah, that's a good
what
point.
What have they got to say about that?
But it's funny, when you actually hear Blair talk, for example, he always talks about technology and the future and stuff like that. Like, it seems to be one of his pet subjects, and I'm seeing a little bit of that here as well, in that they're very much focused on the technological future, whereas the modern Labour Party, they're kind of not too fussed about that. They try and promise people jobs that are kind of going to be redundant eventually, aren't they? And it seems a bit absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really thought about that point majorly either, but the Mark Zuckerberg and Nick Clegg thing, definitely true. Like, I don't know why on earth people are accepting of Nick Clegg being in charge of your Facebook posts. I mean, what is he, like president for international relations or something at Facebook? He spends all his time lecturing Mark Zuckerberg in Zoom calls. must fight racism. Third, he condemns the left's feeble response to identity-based movements like Black Lives Matter and Extinction Rebellion. Labour, in particular, has adopted their slogans uncritically and unthinkingly. True. I mean, just true diagnosis.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is what I mean. Like, Trevor Phillips is definitely, you know, he's still Labour Party. He was in the Labour Party under Blair. Did a lot of damage. Has spent his time trying to fix some of that damage. Like Blair. You know, going around saying, I've effed up. But I respect him because his understanding of things is very data-driven, and also he is on the money for a lot of the problems with the Labour Party. And also the fact that he's calling out there, BLM. It's an identitarian movement.
Absolutely.
Left-wing identitarianism. It's an endless pit of just complete pointless discussion and trying to find out who's the most pure. So, true.
And even from kind of the Labour Party's own perspective, it's going to be putting people off voting for them if they're accepting of this sort of thing, because people know that it's imported from the United States. It doesn't really apply here. There's no...
doesn't even apply in the United States. I mean, like, no. take Michaela Bryant, the one we talk about. BLM endorsed Michaela Bryant. Was like, how dare she be shot by the police? It was like, the lady with a knife who's about to stab another black girl, and you're like, the police who shot her and saved the other black girl's life, he's the evil one. No, he's a hero. He's a goddamn hero.
I should have said it implies even less here. That's probably the better way of putting it.
But it's just, I can't get over it. Like, BLM is such a pathetic organization. I don't know why anyone gives them the time. They want Marxism, that's why. So if you actually go to the New Statesman article, if we can get this up, which is just Tony Blair saying here, I love the title. Without total change, Labour will die. Total change? Total change. The whole thing. The whole thing has to change. Okay, then why are we saving it? Let it die. Why are you upset about it dying? If it needs total change, then the thing should die. The thing is corrupted to the core. The whole thing, totality, it is ruined.
I think I've heard kind of rumblings of Tony Blair actually being interested in becoming the leader of the Labour Party again and becoming elected. So this could...
Do it. If there is anyone to kill the Labour Party, go for it.
He's not exactly the most popular person anymore either, is he? To put it lightly.
Oh, man, I can't imagine anything funnier. I mean, it's a great point as well. Like, who are they going to pick? So, Tony Blair says in here, I wanted to mention we're actually planning like a Based Blair podcast, in which a premium podcast with Carl, where we're just going to list some of the like hilarious stuff Tony Blair's done since he left office. Because you can see like when he's in there, he's like, I'm going to get power. Got power, had no idea what he was doing, messed everything up. And afterwards, you can see him going around thinking about things and coming to the response that everything I did was bad. I just want to go through the list of everything he said that he's like, yeah, I effed up big time. But that's just a teaser for another time.
I'm looking forward to that.
So he says in here, a progressive party seeking power, which looks a cunts at the likes of Trevor Phillips, Sarah Khan, or J.K. Rowling, is not going to win. In case you're wondering who these people are. So Trevor Phillips is demonized within the Labour Party for saying that different races as groups have different habits. Just a truism. There's no debating that whatsoever. Sarah Khan is been takfired from the Labour Party for saying that some Muslims are terrorists. Yeah.
That's factually correct, though. It's obvious.
It's pathetic. And then J.K. Rowling for saying women aren't women. I mean, this is how pathetic the Labour Party is. These people are all kicked out of it. Why? Because they said things that are true. So he says that progressive politics needs to debate these cultural questions urgently and openly. They do plenty of debating, mate. Debate all the time. Debate about who's the purest. That's all they do. Who's the most oppressed? I mean, there's plenty of debate. It's just garbage because it's through the left-wing perspective. So we go back to the Trevor Phillips article. He says, depressingly, though, it's hard to imagine anyone in the Labour leadership assembling a critique of this coherence on force. And it's impossible to name any Labour grandee, including those who became grand on Blair's coattails, having the courage to condemn the party for its capitulation to identity politics. Yes. That is why the whole thing should be burnt to the ground. The whole thing, as you say, totality, it's ruined. Why are you trying to save it? Why are you not writing that eulogy, Trevor? Because you should be. What Blair doesn't say is that demographics matter. In a brilliant essay in the New European, Peter Klenner points out that the typical Labour voter is no longer a blue-collar trade unionist working in a mine, shipyard, steelworks, or a factory. The emotional connection with Labour, built on single industry towns and reinforced by local churches, working men's club, and active trade union branches, won't be coming back. Blue-collar collectivists, the veteran pollster says, God, I hate that term, blue-collar collectivists. I mean, it just tells you everything that's wrong with it. Now constitute fewer than 3% of the electorate. So the traditional Labour base of what they consider, you know, the stereotype Labour voter from, you know, the old days, 3% of the electorate now. Nada, nothing, gone. Yet much of the left still lives in a pre-millennial fantasy where it doesn't sound ridiculous to address your colleagues as comrade. Or comrade, as they like to say. True. Labour should be garnering votes among young, university-educated private renters disillusioned by the realisation that they may never buy or inherit a home. Prices are rising and parents are living longer. Yet in the London Assembly elections, it was the Greens that won the extra seat courtesy of voters christened the Educated Left Behinds. God, isn't that a condemnation of the universities? The guy's like, yeah, these are the Educated Left Behinds.
And they're they're voting as left-wing as possible.
Just, you got the most privileged position of going to a university. I mean, getting a university education is not a small thing in the slightest. They had the privilege, I mean, a privilege in this case. And they've gone through that and they've become a left behind. like, you would have done better digging ditches than going to university. Is essentially what he's saying there. I love everything about it. As for ethnic minorities, the left's casual racism in treating all people of colour, God, ditch the words, Trevor, as one block which it could take for granted has been proven disastrous. Labour's support in deprived Muslim neighbourhoods seems to have held steady, but in West London, home to the country's largest concentration of Indian and Sikh heritage Britons, Sean Bailey, the Conservative candidate for mayor, outpolled Labour for the first time. Good. It's a shame the Muslim constituency of this country don't see the same thing, which is that the Labour worldview of everyone's a collective is not desirable, does not produce good outcomes, and is immoral in and of itself.
It's only a matter of time, though, before the Islamic voting bloc, as he calls it, kind of rejects the Labour Party if they carry on going down this identity politics route, and they won't call a woman a woman and such and such.
I hope they take it over.
They're going to become very alienated.
Do you remember we did it? We did a report on Labour Party published a thing into their own party, an investigation, calling their own party Islamophobic. And on the back of the cover, they just had the Labour logo and the Islamic symbol together on a black flag. So it just became known as the Black Flag of Labour. So I hope they take it over. I want to see the Black Flag of Labour flying at every conference. So he ends, many Labour activists will relish condemning Blair, the party's Daniel, but they would do better to heed the message they have been given by the almighty electorate. That's certainly true. I mean, if we can just go to the next image here, I mean, just as a summation of progressive leftism, you can get up the Facebook post. I just saw this morning, Liverpool FC posting something. I'm not even going to read any of the text. Just look at the image. Look at that. IDAHOP Christian symbol or T, God knows. LFC stands against homophobia, transphobia, and biphobia. What are we even looking at? What is this? I mean,
half the alphabet.
It's so meaningless. It's unreal. Like, I just can't get over. What message does that tell you? Does it tell you anything?
I don't really know. I guess they're virtue signaling, really, aren't they? That's all they're trying to do. They're just. I mean,
God,
I've never even heard the term biphobia before.
I don't even know what half of those letters even stand for in this context. It's just so absurd. I mean, this is where the Labour Party's at. This is where modern left-wing thinking, progressive thinking is at. And if this isn't worth burning to the ground, Trevor, I don't know what is. So in case you're not convinced, I remember people liked the previous clip, so I made another one. So if we get the next clip up, this is from Labour Party 2019 conference. Let's enjoy.
Comrades, I'm a failure.
Comrades.
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 Hi, comrades.
One of our references back here is talking about gender pay gap legislation, and that if you want to bring a case, you have to be a man or a woman. Now, if you're in transition or if you're a non-binary person, you have to then go to that and say you're a man or a woman.
Proud and honoured to be leading this motion on behalf of all those women at Labour Women's Conference earlier this year.
We have a segregated
As part of the women. Review, an expert panel will consider how climate change and its impact are taught from primary school onwards. As part of a broader project of decolonising and diversifying a curriculum that is part of an inclusive and equitable national education service,
there should be no place for grammar schools.
What if we went into the next general election when saying, with Labour in power, we will abolish Eton?
Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, these are just some of the bad racist men who are combining. And we are good people who need to associate.
Common ownership
of the production, distribution and exchange of knowledge itself.
But this country is only what it is because of centuries of immigration and the cultural enrichment that people come into this country have brought.
The EU referendum was fought by our opponents on the issue of immigration, taking back control of borders and ending free movement. But we won't stop until Yarlswood, Brooke House, Harmondsworth and all the other detention centres, these appalling places, are closed.
We can't be an anti-racist party while vulnerable migrant women suffer in cells.
Illegal immigrants. That's what they're talking about.
We also need positive action to diversify our workforce from the ground up and from the top down.
And the values we hold dear, like inclusion and diversity, equality, they are all being threatened. We've already seen the University of Glasgow make available £20 million in reparations. Other banks and businesses must follow.
We should stop the denial, deflections, and start acting like a party which gives a damn about being a safe and welcoming space for Jews. Because, conference, whatever you think, whatever you shout, take it from me. It really isn't.
The idea that we are not actually taking this Modi seriously as a fascist, as a danger to the rights of Kashmiris to self-determine their own future, is egregious.
Modi, the past Hitler, or the present Trump.
Stand against hate, stand against racism, stand against genocide, stand against extremism, stand against Modi.
I say to Boris Johnson, bring it on.
Dude, get in a fight.
Yeah, lose all their seats, that's good. Yeah, I mean, how many more of these clips do I have to make, Trevor, until we just agree, yeah, death to the Labour Party. There's nothing to be saved. That's all. Oh, boy. Anyway, let's go to the video comments.
Carl, disagree with you on the question of ransoms. They should always be paid, but they should only be paid in one currency, and that is lead.
That's a great way of putting it.
I take it that was in reference to Friday, right?
Yeah, Carl was saying you shouldn't pay ransoms if someone's asking for them because, you know, terrorists and whatnot, because then it shows weakness. That's a true point. Paying them in lead is certainly the preferable option. Although it kind of smatters me of the whole we don't negotiate with terrorists line from Bush, which is just a lie. Like, everyone knows that's a lie. Negotiate with terrorists all the time. It's about whether or not you go through with it or not, or you just kill them at the last minute, which is the preferable thing to do.
Give them the money, kill them, take it back.
Yeah. Now everyone's a winner. Let's go for the next one.
G'day, Lotus Eaters. I've noticed a couple of people in your video comments have been looking for non-woke sci-fi and fantasy, so I thought I'd let them know about my books. You can go and find them at cscooper.com.au/books. They're really good stories, so go and check them out. And I'd also like to mention, I think that the tenets of both mummism and dadism can be found in the book of Ephesians, chapter 5, verse 23, all the way through to chapter 6, verse 4. What are your thoughts?
I suppose I have to send some reading to Carl, but I love that people just advertise on our show with the video comments. It's wonderful. Hey, thanks, guys. But
yeah, thank you.
To be
honest,
I was kind of staring at his teeth. God, those things are white. I want teeth that white. But, Anyway, let's go to the next one.
Now, this isn't about red states or blue states. It's about you, your family, people of the United States of America. You know, we got to do better. If we can paddle the canoe down the apple cart, we'll realize that ice cream don't have bones. You know, America is going through a rough patch, and the white man's culture has to change.
I'm loving the impressions. I don't know why, but
I take it that was Joe Biden, wasn't it?
That tickled me, but not like that. Joe. God, it's one of the interesting things I've seen. There's a bunch of YouTubers I subscribe to who aren't political. They do other things, play games and whatnot. They've all started making little clips occasionally in which they'll be on stream and they'll completely fail to pronounce something correctly, and then they'll just label it like the clip, like having a Joe Biden moment. Like, I love how it's cutting through the culture. People do get it.
I've been using that for ages now. It's great.
Yeah, but
it's spreading, finally.
You see more normies joining in. It's like, yeah. Let's go for the next one.
Hi, guys.
I've been thinking about the term woke. It seems to have been kind of, there's a lot of fluff being added to it, if you know what I mean. Like, the woke agenda is a thing you hear, like, kind of, like, suit Tory MPs talking about, as if it kind of has become a buzzword to just be like, oh, I'm not for the woke agenda. Like, if you know what I mean, if you follow what I'm saying, I'm very much at the start of this kind of line of thought, but I don't think it's kind of harsh enough to convince people. I think it makes it sound a bit silly, and it makes it sound like it's not a threat, and it gives politicians who aren't going to do anything about it a way of just saying, well, I'm against the bad things and I'm for the good things. So yeah, just let me know what you think about that, guys.
First and foremost, I like your Beatles poster, they're my favourite band, but also I understand what you're trying to say in that you need to be a bit more specific about what elements you're talking about, because in the context of, say, you were talking about, I don't know, racial issues, you need to say what is explicitly bad about it, because if you just rely on a word to encompass everything, you're relying on people knowing everything about it. And I think you've got to remember to walk people through what it actually means and why it's bad a lot of the time.
I'm for individual justice, not race justice.
You know, exactly.
I'm not for race socialism, which is what the wokists are providing, race and gender socialism. They want all of the power, wealth and land, as Ashtarka so perfectly puts, distributed among race and gender lines. Nonsense. I mean, it's better when you phrase it like that. I know what he's talking about as well, though. Like, even if you... Tory MPs, Freudian slip, don't get this perfectly. But even if they did, the term woke on itself... It's one of these things where it happens to all political words. Like, they all get used in ways that are overused and wrong and all the rest of it. But I do see it as sort of like, what was that? I mean, there used to be SJW to describe these people because they all believe in social justice and therefore not individual justice and so on and so forth. And you can come up with a million words. Woke seems to have just taken the public consciousness. So it's like, okay, fine, we'll use that one. But if you need to be able to define it, I mean, someone will ask you, what do they believe? Race and gender socialism. They want to divide wealth, power, and land along race and gender lines. And that does make sense, because, I mean, you look at what they propose. Like, I love, like, in that Labour clip there, that lady proposing that we need, what was it, positive discrimination for women? Like, literally just, we'll hire the woman even though she's, a worse candidate because we need more women on the board. And then on the sign in front of her, it says, what was it, people before privilege.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah, getting the privilege of being hired there for your genitalia. But certainly true, but what can you really do? I mean, it's like, if you want to compare it on the other side, I imagine there are criticisms within left-wing circles about the term Islamophobia. I mean, they understand the weaknesses of that term, which is that you can turn around and be like, why is it irrational to fear a religion? Doesn't make any sense. Like, Christophobia. As soon as you bring that up, the whole thing collapses because it looks so silly. But they're happy to use it as a battering ram because they know it gets results. The term anti-Muslim bigotry, which Majid Nawaz brings up, much better term for describing reality, but it doesn't seem to have taken the public consciousness. So they use it for getting the message across. It's just part of politics, in my view. But hey, if you got a great one, I mean, what is it? Louis Levive came up with, what was it, social terrorists for SJWs? It wasn't wrong.
That's a little bit strong. It sounds a bit alarmist, doesn't it?
Yeah, but they are social terrorists. They will literally come after your social life and try to destroy you. I mean, they are terrorizing you for political gains. That's terrorist.
But when people hear terrorists, they think, phew.
Exactly. So it's like, where is a good term here? Woke seems to have just been working, so... That's the one that's gonna.
I always preferred social justice warrior because it focuses on the social kind of element and the justice, the perversion of justice in adding the kind of social part before it shows that it's something that is other than true justice. Yeah. And that's why I like that one. But
it wasn't a bad one. I think it's become a bit of a meme.
It's a bit stale now, isn't it?
Because of the cringe compilations,
mm-hmm.
which work wonders, but. That was my favourite comment. Whoever commented underneath the Labour video, the first one, that the Labour Party has basically become an SJW cringe compilation. That was great. Anyway, but if anyone has any ideas, I mean, put them in the chat. I'm reading woke terrorist, lefty milker's army. What?
What?
We're going to move on.
Hello, I hope this arrives on the 17th of May, because then it fits when I say Happy Norwegian Constitution Day. Of course, since it's a special occasion, and I am a hardcore calamist, I made a cake for the occasion. a chocolate mousse cake with an almond bottom, strawberry jello topping with blueberries and strawberries. I hope you have a fantastic day. Down with Keto Sharia.
I endorse this message.
That cake looked really nice. Yeah. Did he say Norwegian Constitution Day? That's today.
I assume that's like... I'm going to have to look up the reasons, but I assume it's like Independence Day for Norway. I don't know how to speak any Norwegian other than like Norsk, but...
I hope you have a good day. There we go.
Yeah.
So
I want to say an insult, but I haven't got anything. I suppose I do have one. Gusukka du far kokken. But that's not really relevant to this conversation, so let's move on. You want to read?
Sure. So Joseph Woodland says, lack of immigration will drive nurses' wages up, meaning they can shut the hell up. It's funny that they never realise we import loads of nurses to keep wages down. On top of that, with their moaning about wages, everyone I know in the private sector of almost every field has to take about a 15 to 25% pay cut.
Great.
Fair point. Mm. Omar Awad, good for Britain, but bad for Britons. Remind me of when they were crying about mer GDP while wages were skyrocketing due to Brexit. Good. In the same way that the Dalai Lama said, Europe is for Europeans, I say Britain is for the British.
Sorry, what? Europeans for the Europeans. Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question. It was a bit dangerous in there. Good for Britain, but bad for Britons. Reminds me of when they were crying about my GDP. Yeah, totally true. While the wages were skyrocketing due to Brexit, good. In the same way the Dalai Lama said, Europe is for the Europeans, I say Britain is for the British. I mean, what else can it be for? I mean, it doesn't make sense otherwise. Like, Britain is for everyone? No. No. Like, why would it be? Why does any foreigner from, you know, like, Southeast Asia have the same rights to be in Britain as any person born in Britain, raised by British parents?
You say it about another country and it sounds even more strange. Like, Saudi Arabia is for everyone.
But also, doesn't that kind of fall into, like, if it's for everyone, then why is it not for the British? Why is India not for the British? Why is Egypt not for the British? I wonder why. Anyway.
Student of history. Fun question. Would those lovely leftists want to import millions of people like me, a centre-right libertarian who is pro-gun, pro-free speech, anti-government and anti-Gibbs? The answer is no, even though I could join a native tribe by blood, I'm too white for their immigration standards.
Yeah, because it's not about your skin tone, it's about your values. That's what they really care about.
They want Labour voters.
Yeah. Your beliefs are white. But I'm black. Yeah, but your beliefs are white.
Matthew Hammond, does anyone, even on the left, actually think that these refugees are actually refugees? Leftist parties' policies throughout the world is so bad that even large amounts of legal immigration is not enough. They have to import more people as refugees. Yep, as many people as possible.
Do they genuinely believe it? I wonder, because I see them down there. You know, the ones who go down to the camp in Calais and, you know, hang out with them and do all that stuff. I mean, some of them seem to believe it, but they seem to get disillusioned quite fast. So maybe they're just naive until they interact with the people and they're like, why are you here? Oh, I came from Ethiopia. Was there any war in Ethiopia? Well, there wasn't at the time.
Yeah, bad example.
There is one now. But I remember, what was it? I think it, like, some of them had come from Pakistan or Senegal. And it was like, how? How the heck did you get this far and not think, yeah, I'll stop now. I'm probably safe. Like,
we should hire them as border consultants, because if they got that far...
They're geniuses. Sure, I'll give them a job.
I couldn't have done that, to be fair. Like, sneaking over that many borders, it is impressive in a way.
That should be the way to deal with it. Like, anyone who gets through... like, we're going to set up a really, you know, massive investment in border controls. And anyone who gets through, you get hired as a border agent.
It's like some kind of, like, daytime TV game show.
Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, get the BBC involved. I mean, they're not doing anything. Like, give them some cameras, go down to the borders.
Then we can market it abroad and then pay for the extra cost. It's the perfect scheme.
This is Mohammed. He's from Iran, and he loves his chances at Border UK. It's like a theme music. Like, duh, duh, duh. Yeah.
So, Tobias Schmidt. I have to say, I really want Germany to leave the EU as well.
Life hacks.
Especially when looking at how your immigration numbers have improved. Sadly, for the next election, we're looking down the barrel of various at-the-core socialist parties having a chance of getting into power. It would be the Green Party with deep red tendencies on the inside, the centre-left SDP and the hard left. At this point, I think accelerationism seems like the only way out, since the other parties, with the notable exceptions of the AfD, are being driven forward by the hard left. A painful awakening seems to be the only viable way back to the same politics. We've rebuilt the country once before. We can do it again. What's your thoughts on this?
Germany, I mean, the polling looks terrible. I have no idea how the Greens are so high in Germany, but I don't understand it. But if I was a German, I mean, please, Germans, try and explain to me the CDU. Like, why? Like, what? They don't make any sense. Like, at least the stuff we get through from them, the fact that they're so pro-migration, for example. I mean, how do people keep voting for them? Is it just tribalism or something? But I met some AfD people when Carl gave the speech about, what was it, white fragility. People who don't know, actually, that's a premium thing people should check out if they are signed up. Don't know, because it was a while ago now. Carl went to Germany, went to the German parliament, gave a speech on white fragility and how unbelievably racist the argument is. I mean, it's literally the same worldview as the Nazis. He wants to raise racial consciousness so we understand the whites versus the non-whites world, and it's just like, man, you are nuts. Yeah, go and give that a watch if you've got some spare time. It's in the premium section somewhere. And the AfD guys, they all seem perfectly sane. Like, I understand that there's, you know, bad media about them. Oh, did you know AfD members, you know, done this thing stupid or that thing stupid? But it reminds me of UKIP, where before I joined them, I thought they were all going to be completely nuts, like the average member. And you join, you find out that most of them were completely normal. And when we went and met the AfD guys, they were liberals. Like, many of them weren't even, like, full-on conservatives, in my view. The main one we met, I can't remember his name now, but he grew up in Czechoslovakia, and he lived under communism. He started his own, like, version of the Boy Scouts that was capitalist, and therefore they had to leave. The irony being that they fled, and then 1 year later it collapsed. It was like, damn, a waste of time. But he ended up in Germany, and now he's grown up, and his parents, I assume, are probably dead or grandparents or something. And he's looking around in Germany, just being like, why are we so full of communists? Like, why is socialist thinking so rampant in Germany, the place I fled to get away from these people? And that's why he became an AfD member and then as an MP. So, I mean, if I was a German, I'd probably join the AfD. I mean, sorry. Peter Bryson. There we go. Bryston.
You'd think that Germany would be a bit inoculated against it, like many of the Eastern European countries that did live under communism. Because, of course, half of Germany was under the Soviet Union. So you'd think you'd have people who had lived under that system and been like, no, this is awful.
Well, I think the AfD gets their best vote appeals from East Germany.
It really doesn't surprise me.
That would make sense. But, I mean, I guess it's just, you know, Nazi guilt from the old days. That they still vote for socialism. It's just like, that was the problem, you idiots. Like, they're the same ideology, just more honest about their intentions. Anyway, sorry.
Chad Koala, there is one silver lining to the slew of horrific statements made by the pro-Palestine protesters around the world. More and more normies will get the red pill of what awaits if these lunatics get any more power in the world, and straight from the horse's mouth, no less. Very true, I thought the same thing.
Oh, man. I mean, what's happening to that inflatable? Like, who's taking that home?
I don't know.
Where do they put it?
Jeremy
up again?
Corbyn's taking it home, didn't you know?
It's
his own, yeah. So, Brickmaker, I must say I find it quite entertaining how all these gentle-hearted lady leftists who want everyone to flourish in love and happiness are suddenly down with hating Jews.
yeah. Certainly entertaining.
It's a little bit strange to hear.
I mean, it's mask off, really. I mean, they hate white people just as much on every other day. They just try and hide it by being like, no, I'm an anti-racist. Like, no, you just hate white people. Shut up.
Israel Hayes, what the hell is it with the bloody left? Protesting about things they have F all to do with them personally, my lord. They have lockdowns, immigration problems, a wrecked economy, free speech issues, and a cultural demon biting at them. But no, Palestine is what gets them on their feet. It's insane.
Yeah. I also love, there's some photos floating around of Labour Party conference in like 2016 or something, in which, you know, they're whining about the flag and be like, we can't fly the British flag is racist and all the rest of it. And yet from the conference, there's just hordes of people with Palestinian flags flying them. It's like, they'll fly every flag just as long as it's not British.
Yeah, that's very bad. What was it they said recently? They said something about it being a sign of like fascism.
Flag waving.
Yeah.
Go to Labour conference, I guess.
Lots of Palestinian fascists there, apparently. James Hayes, did you guys hear about the Israeli ground operation a few days ago? They faked a ground invasion, and the world media reported that Israel were invading. All the Hamas militants fled into the underground metro tunnels instead of invading. Israel's artillery airstrike the tunnels, collapsing them, doing huge damage to them, and minimalizing civilian casualties.
Yeah, that was really funny. So, there, for people who might not know, like the Israelis essentially trolled the Hamas guys into getting bombed. So As he said,
I didn't actually know about that.
They put out being like, hey, we're going to invade the ground, you know, sending ground forces. So they all got in the tunnels ready to ambush them. They were like, that's great, bomb the tunnels. And blew up all the tunnels and killed everyone. I'm like, well, there you go. Get baited.
That's a clever move, actually.
Yeah. I mean, just if nothing else, I mean, military genius right there. That's great. Using social media to kill your enemy.
Student of history. Base law of the horseshoe, when your leftists decided it's acceptable to kill and do very, very bad things to Jews. I'm just waiting for them to say, let's have camps.
I mean, what's stopping them?
Yeah.
Ideologically, nothing.
Benjamin Charles, when you consider that under international law, that embassy is sovereign Israeli territory, maybe it would have been interesting to see what happens if the protesters had gotten past the gate. I would rather not see that, to be honest. Long talks on the Nietzsche. I would think that the leftist pro-Palestine argument would be easily rebuked by pointing out that the Nazis also hated the Jewish people. You'd think that the optics of that would force them into switching their positions. Perhaps this could be a point to try and de-radicalize some of the less indoctrinated thoughts.
No, I don't know how to put this succinctly. I'm sorry to be so dismissive, but it's like, in my view, the Nazis are essentially just the end point of the socialists. I mean, Mussolini being a socialist before he became a fascist and wrote the Doctrine of Fascism and with his friends and whatnot. And then the Nazis being national socialists and all the rest of it. And it's everyone's like, oh, it's just the name. It's not just the name. It's not a quirk. Because you can see it in their supporters of the time. There are so many first-hand accounts of people who were hardcore Bolsheviks would go out there. Like, there's one in the Ravaged Century book in which these guys have a shrine to Lenin. Like, they've got a little shrine in their house. And they bring this British guy back, and it's a shrine to Hitler. And they're like, ah, oh, that's weird. And the guys are like, no, don't worry. That was a shrine to Lenin 3 weeks ago. Okay. And it's not the only thing. I mean, just Google beefsteak Nazis, if you've got the time. There's a Wikipedia page about this. The Nazis, they had so many communists joining them that they made a joke name for them. Beefsteak Nazis. Red on the inside, brown on the outside. There's so much cross-pollination. So I think showing the socialists that they're supporting essentially Nazi ideology is kind of pointless, because, I mean, that's fine for them. That's where they're going.
Baron von Merkhausen, similar mostly peaceful protests have also helped, happened in Berlin, sorry. The media are currently falling over themselves, trying to figure out if Muslims are sacred or anti-Semitism is bad, which is astonishing given that Germany has had such strong pro-Israel stance in recent times, and nobody would tolerate anti-Semitism here, historical reasons and all that. That's interesting to hear. I didn't really realise. I don't really follow any German politics, so...
yeah. I did see there were huge protests there as well, though.
Mm.
One of the worst ones was a while ago, I think it was Kraut made a video about this, actually, in which there was a pro-Palestine protest in like 2016 or something, and they were marching past a Holocaust memorial museum, and they were chanting Heil Hitler. And the media first reported is like, Kraut chants Heil Hitler, rise at the far right, and then it turned out it was Gaza protests. It was like,
I bet they swept that under the rug relatively quickly.
Yeah, it's just, don't ignore that.
Oh.
Sorry, we're getting thunder in the office.
I hope it's not in the office. It's outside. Matthew Wilson, screaming into a crowd to kill or rape people is textbook legally defined incitement.
That's true if it's imminent. That's the thing. So in On Liberty, for example, John Stuart Mill gives the example of corn dealers. And people hate the corn dealers, and they can call for the deaths of the corn dealers all they want. But if the corn dealers are right there, then it's imminent. You can, reasonably... reasonable expectation of imminent incitement to violence. That's a shorthand version of the standard the US has come to of their understanding of liberalism, and I think it is correct. Because you can stand in a crowd and say, I think the corn dealers should be killed for what they have done, and so on and so forth. And no one says that's you actually trying to kill them, and even if you truly believe it. But if you are, you know, let's kill them next week, let's gather in this place, there's more specifics about it, then you can make an argument of imminent incitement to violence. Corn dealers right in front of you, you chat about killing them. But you've got a crowd of angry men and there's some corn dealers and you're chatting about killing them, then...
The dynamic's different, isn't it?
The dynamic's different. That's the differentiation there. And I fall on the American side of this. I think the American justices have done the right thing, saying that John Stuart Mill's interpretation of free speech there is true. Because otherwise, it just leads you into a whole host of places where it's like, can you even say that someone deserves death if we don't take that standard? I mean, if I say pedophiles deserve death, does that mean inciting violence against all pedophiles? You know, should I be arrested for that?
Well, you're asking me. I agree with you on free speech stuff.
But that's the thing. That's something to think about. I might be, you know, I'm happy for the debate, though.
So, HR Slave. Callum, I understand your conflicted feelings regarding free speech and what the guy shouted at the Palestinian protest. This is why double standards around free speech are so infuriating. We are asking for the same freedoms that the radical left have enjoyed for decades.
Yeah, and it sucks that they get the rights we don't. Mm-hmm. My understanding is apparently these guys, well, there's a rumor that they've been arrested. I don't know if that's
true. I believe 13 people have been arrested, but I'm not entirely sure whether that's for the actual violence or the... I know that the police are looking for the people who drove down, but I don't know whether they found them yet because, you know, it's only recently happened, so it may not be widely spread that we know about that yet. So, Craig Gorman, the news is honestly the source of anti-Semitism. Every story starts talking about the death tolls of Israel's counterattack because if they focus on the attempted bombings of hospitals, schools and civilians, then the public might actually be informed. Plus, since so many of the attacks on Israel are unsuccessful, they are not flashy headline news.
Yeah.
Yep. The Iron Dome is not good for PR in Israel, apparently.
What?
It's too effective.
I did see there was an argument. I think it was Hugo that posted it. Was actually the Iron Dome has saved more Gazans than you can think of.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Because if the rockets did land in Israel and started killing thousands of people, Gaza would be wiped off the map. So I suppose there's that.
Kevin Fox. Callum, based on your comments, Ari, shouting about raping Jewish women from the car should not be illegal. So on that basis, Lord Voldemort should be okay to walk through Halifax shouting that all Muslim men should be castrated and that would be okay. I think the way the law is applied these days, he'd be in cuffs in minutes. Actually, he'd probably be attacked by Pakistani and Bangladeshi men, then arrested for inciting violence.
So firstly, the laws in the UK, he would be screwed under any circumstance, no matter where he was shouting that. But again, it depends on the situation. I mean, this is why it's a bit vague, but if he's in a Muslim borough, in which there are loads of Muslims around, and he's got an angry crowd of men, and he's chanting, we should castrate all the Muslim men, then you can say it. But if he is in a hall in Cornwall, and there is not a Muslim man for 1,000 miles, and he's saying, I think Muslim men should be castrated, you know, horrible thing to say, you know, definitely, obviously, hatred against the religious group, but should it be a crime? Because if he hasn't actually caused any damage, if no one's been harmed by his speech, what's the argument? You know, how do you separate that from saying, let's kill all the pedos? But
absolutely.
Thank you for the debate. I like people when disagree.
It looks like Sakir and Sadiq Khan's Labour Socialist Workers' Party is repeating their 1930s playbook with the harassment of Jewish areas and attacks on the rabbis.
Yeah. Labour Party conference 2019, that Jewish guy, just saying this is a horrible place for Jews to be. I don't know if you could pick it up or not, but people started booing him for saying this at conference. And it's the best part is it's live streamed to the Labour Party YouTube channel. So you could, I was watching it in real time when it happened. I was like, oh, for God's sakes.
Radical centrist God, the Labour Party should not be saved. I think it's time for another party to have a crack at being the opposition. They have failed us miserably and have been a major party for 100 years. Why sustain that which does not wish to sustain itself? Unless they can give up communism, they are worthless in my eyes.
And they never give absolutely up communism. So yeah, utterly worthless. I mean, there's the thing as well, like you think back to UKIP being, what was it, 16% or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I know at the time it was a single issue party for Brexit, or at least that's how it's interpreted. But I mean, I think that's a bit wrong. I think that it should be essentially some kind of UKIP versus the Tories. And that starts with the death of the Labour Party.
Yeah, I would like some kind of classical liberal party. That'd be nice, rather than just soft Labour in the Conservative Party. There needs to be someone who needs to drag the Conservatives more towards the right, because at the minute they're...
Conservatives. Or not being Conservatives right now, they should.
Yeah. James Lee, the common thread among the Palestinian protesters is that they ascribe ideologies that are fundamentally anti-Western. That is why white middle-class socialist students can protest alongside fervent Arab nationalists despite believing in different utopias. They are united in a cause against something, that something being Western civilization.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially the dichotomy of the world seems to be, do you hate the Western world order or do you like it?
Sad that that's the question that's dividing people.
Yeah, but it's why you get these weird coalitions. Mm. Didn't you know communism is a haram?
Christian Carlson, sorry if I mispronounced your name. If the Labour Party dies, then the UK may become so dominated by the Tory party that after the Common Sense Group manifesto came out, it may split into two factions, a neocon Blairite wing and the proper Conservative Party.
Yes.
That would be nice.
Wonderful.
Alex Ogle, should the Labour Party be saved? No. They've always been the party of hatred and Marxism. Their origins are from the Communist Party of Great Britain and they need to die out. The real question is, who would step up and be in opposition? I'd like to see the return of the Liberal Party, but they're are yet further to collapse before they can be rehabilitated. Independent parties may hold some hope, but they always failed in the past. A strong independent party may come from a powerful moral position. The Whigs arose to opposition from Tory corruption. Labour arose from a desire to address workers' rights. And unfortunately, free speech is not that moral cause. Also, Callum, the 26th letter of the alphabet is what? No, it's Z.
I've been infected with Yankeeism. Blame the internet. I've got a load of things wrong with my language anyway, so it's not the first thing, but I can't even spell. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Anyway, but we're going to end it there because we don't have too much time. But in case you're wondering as well, that second clip that we've made there, that should be now live on all of the Lotus ES social medias and the YouTube channel. In case you want to give that a share, go and give that a share, please, because people need to see what the Labour Party are made of. Not jobs. Anyway, without further ado, we will be back on Tuesday, tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And Carl will be back from then till Friday, and then he's off again for a week. But we'll see you then. Thank you.
Goodbye.